Bankless Nation. It is the fourth week of May in the year of our Lord, 2024. And this is an absolutely historic week on the Bankless Weekly Roll-Up.
I think this might be one of the winningest weeks that I've ever seen in crypto.
Yeah. Hey,
yeah? Yeah.
I'm trying to think of another week that stands out in the way that this week stands out. And I would definitely say it's the most winning week we've had politically. Maybe the most winning week in America since I've been in crypto. Maybe the most winning week ever.
I think it's the most winning week ever, because like we're not just talking about the ETH ETF, but we're talking about an entire political 180 about its stance towards the entire industry. And that is showing up, like, first and foremost in the price of ETH because of the ETH ETF. But this impacts the entire industry.
I gotta tell you, man, it feels real good.
After the last two and a half years we've had
all of the politics.
Bullshit, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. like pressing down against us and the U.S. government to actually clock in some wins. One thing we should say before we get into this roll-up. Okay, so for Bankless listeners, you guys have an advantage of living in a future world where you actually know the outcome of the Ethereum ETF approval or denial.
And if it was somehow denied, this is aging so poorly.
So the way David and I record weekly roll-ups is we record them the day before. So right now, it's like we should clock in our time. It's Thursday, May 23rd at 12:40 EST.
Eastern time.
And as of now, we don't know for sure whether the Ethereum ETF will be approved or not. Remember, the deadline is today. The deadline is Thursday, the 23rd, at the time that
today
we're recording.
Today is the day.
So we don't know as we're jumping into this. You know, but we don't know.
Yeah.
And I think, David, we just got to, for the sake of this episode, we just got to assume approval and maybe just tell the story of this 180 where it seems like the odds of approval are approaching certainty here. One thing I'll also say is if it is approved, there's another episode already waiting for you.
Yeah, one that we shipped faster than this one. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's probably the episode, hopefully, where we're celebrating the approval of the Ethereum ETF. So go check out your podcast feed to get that, or on YouTube or wherever you listen.
But nonetheless, other things also happened in crypto. So in addition to the ETH ETF approval that we are probably going to talk about, how the approval swung in our favor at the 11th hour, there's also the political changing winds in our favor as well. And then also a bunch of airdrops, perhaps on the back of just like being extremely bullish. ETH edition, big airdrops coming out this week that are being teased by the protocols themselves. Meanwhile, we learn about what was inside the Uniswap Wells notice. And then also Bankless unleashes phase two of our on-chain collectibles. So all of this and more coming up in the weekly roll-up. But first, a message from our friends and sponsors over at Transporter. Transporter is a brand new consumer bridging app powered by Chainlink's CCIP. We did a Twitter Spaces with Chainlink God and Fishy Catfish.
Really good.
They're so smart. They're so precise in their speech. Really useful. If you want to learn about like how Transporter fits into the Chainlink ecosystem, definitely go listen to that Twitter space. It's on the Bankless Twitter. You can just scroll down. After you scroll down through all the tweets of like Bankless talking about how we're winning so hard.
Yeah.
Transporter.io, if you want to use this bridging app to go through all the chains, Arbitrum, Avalanche, Base, BNB, any EVM chain really. And then you can bridge all your assets, ETH, Link, USDC, and more.
Yeah. So all you have to do is go to Transporter.io and just send it. Just like the ETH price this week, I think.
Just like the ETH price.
We got to start with Bitcoin, though. Let's give the king his due. All right, Bitcoin is the number one crypto asset. Mm-hmm. So, David, let's look at the Kraken charts and tell us where we are on the week. Because Bitcoin had not a bad week.
A green week, yeah. Started the week 65,800, and then it went up 3%. This week to where it is now at 68,000, hit 71,000 at the top, but has come down since hitting 71 on the backs of the ETH ETF news that it was very likely going to be approved. Bitcoin hit 71,000, came back down to 68,100 where we are now. Anyways, moving on to ETH price, starting the week at the low price of $2,950.
Silly, under three. We started this week
under 3,000. Yeah,
so
yeah,
dumb. Just, silly.
ETH really pushing new lows on the price at the start of this week, up 28% on the week.
Woo!
Currently at $3,800, hitting $3,900, above $3,900 this morning. Definitely some very strong volatility in the ETH price this week. 28%. So Bitcoin up 3%. Nice job, Bitcoin. ETH up 28% on the week.
David, look at the size of this candle. This happened, what, May 20th? Was that the
Monday,
big run?
Monday, May 20th, yeah.
And we're going to talk later in the episode about the tweet that really started this God candle. Yeah. And I think we want to get to maybe the size of this God candle in a second, but there's another chart we should look at, which is the good old Ethereum Trust. You remember that thing? ETH-E? Yeah.
Thing's about to go away. ETH-E, the Grayscale ETH-E discount, was trading at a 24% discount. So you could buy Ether at 24% off because people just didn't want to hold the Grayscale ETH-E discount by that much. It is now down. That discount has reduced down to 7%. So actually, they're still like
From like negative 20?
From negative 24 to negative 7. So they're still in the Grayscale ETH-E trust. There's still a 7% discount at the time of recording. So you can still, as of this moment, buy ETH 7% off.
As of this moment, but they're going to hear it tomorrow. It's going to be post-approval.
Close right up. Real stale. We've also just seen some insane volume in the Grayscale ETH-E trust. You just like 3 times more volume on a daily basis than we've seen ever before.
Did you get in on some of this, David? Did you get in this in your 401k? And you're like, do you have any of those retirement accounts or anything?
I don't have a 401k.
This has been a bleeding goodbye for a very long time.
For sure.
And we mentioned it a few times, more than a few times on the roll-up. So hopefully some Bankless listeners benefited from this ARB opportunity here.
Which there still is.
As of recording. We're just assuming this thing gets approved. So let's continue with it.
Just reminder, if the Ether ETF does get approved, which the Grayscale will be one of them, the ETH trust gets converted into an ETF and that premium just zips, poof, gone. And now it trades at par.
Yeah. So let's get back to that God candle. How big was it?
I'm going to start with the ETH market cap. Started the week at $370 billion. It is now $460 billion. So in 7 days, Ethereum added $90 billion to its market cap. That is 1.25 Solana added to the Ethereum market cap in 7 days. On Monday, this Monday, when we got the news that there was some a change of the winds in the political establishment about the ETH ETF approval, Ethereum got its largest candle ever. And I'm not talking about green candle, like candle, red or green, the largest candle ever. Yes. A daily candle, 24-hour candle of $595. That is the most that the ETH price has ever moved in a daily basis.
I mean, we set this up in our live stream earlier this week on I think Monday, where we were talking about this news just came in. But before this, all right, so at the bottom of the candle, ETH was in some pretty negative narrative territory. People were not feeling good about Ethereum, this bull cycle, and a lot of people had priced out the idea that an Ethereum ETF was even possible. So this is the market just suddenly realizing, uh-oh.
We're offsides.
We're underweight. We got to get back in.
Yeah. I mean, granted, they knew things changed. Like there was previously
new information.
There's new information. So like you can debate about whether that means offsides or not. There are some ETH stalwarts out there that says like this was always a possibility that the market was totally like underserving.
Yeah.
But yes, nonetheless, there's like, and I still actually think that there's quite a bit of like offsidesness in the crypto markets in this present moment.
But this is what another thing that's nice about this candle is it's fundamentals. Very clearly, it's not just like a day of trading or like, you know, some whales buying. This is clearly fundamentals getting priced in.
Totally. Ether price is actually still 28% below all-time highs. And so there's like right now there's a big conversation. It's like, okay, like, but what will the ETH ETF approval actually do to the ETH price? Will it underperform in terms of its impact versus Bitcoin because there's just not as much demand for the ETH ETF than there was in comparison to Bitcoin? Will it overperform versus Bitcoin because of the price sensitivity that Ether has? And actually, as a tech platform like asset, there's actually more demand relative to its market cap versus Bitcoin. Right now, that's a conversation that's currently unfolding.
Let's talk about that. So all-time high was what 4,850? Something 4,800 territory, and I'm looking at the Kraken charts here. The last time we hit that was November 2021.
Yeah,
I had forgotten that was in 2021. So, what was it like in Ethereum at that time? What was it like in crypto at that time? A much different market than the all-time high we might hit now. Certainly, nothing even close to an ETF.
Well, first and foremost, at that moment in time, we had 0% interest rates. in November of 2021.
Okay, so that helps.
That phase of the market was actually dominated by the Sol Luna AVAX trade. November 2021 was Sol Luna AVAX territory. Luna, of course, would then pop just 2 months later, 3 months later. That was really the top of the market. Yeah.
I guess this just feels like a much stronger foundation as we're approaching this new all-time high than we had in November 2021. So that's an interesting comp for you. Should we talk about the ratio for a minute?
Yeah, ratio. Start of the week, pretty piss poor at 0.0458, which is a three-year low for the ratio.
Yeah,
it has now jumped up to 0.055, which is still low. That's still a low number for the ratio.
I'm going to guess here, David, that this is the biggest God candle we've seen in the ratio. Like, maybe in history? I don't know.
No, in 2017, the ratio just moves a lot slower now. In 2017, there were some bigger movements. Like, I actually kind of think, like, it's a good start.
2017, I guess. 2017, yeah. That was such a long time ago in like crypto history. But that was when Ethereum was just starting its price discovery ascent, wasn't it?
Totally. Yeah. Going from 0.045 to 0.055 is like Ethereum getting out of the basement and is now back onto like level one. But like we still have a lot of room to grow. In order to get bullish, like I want to see 0.07.
Do you want to do the thing where you call the bottom this cycle on the ratio and you say it was like over here? It was like last weekish.
Yes. That's exactly what I'll do.
David just called the bottom.
That's easy. So did you just make me call the bottom?
It's such an easy bottom call. I just gave you that punch, man. I just thought that's a layup for you. You're welcome. Let's talk about the total price in the crypto market cap. Where are we?
Yeah, $300 billion was added to the crypto markets in the last 7 days. Started the week at $2.45 trillion, ending the week at $2.75 trillion. I think 90 billion of that reminder was out of Ether. But like also... many other things are also up. Like generally, the market's up.
Finally, ETH doing its part, though. You know,
taking the lead. Yeah,
it was lagging.
Some good ETH bull fuel out of you guys. We got some two takes that we want to highlight here. One from Van Spencer, who says the ETH thesis has always been that there is a far lower supply of ETH than the market realizes due to years of burn, ETH in staking and restaking, and ETH locked in DeFi and NFTs. And that this supply imbalance will manifest when a demand shock hits. A jump in ETH demand will be the catalyst to reflexively push the ecosystem into overdrive. More fees, more staking, less ETH supply, more flows. We haven't really seen like marginal new ETH demand.
No, we haven't.
Since we
it's
got
the
proof
old
of stake.
Same crusty holders and whales, basically.
Yeah, like we have not since the merge. Since like the term ultrasound money is now like formally cringe. But since the evocation of ultrasound money, which was the merge and the burn, we have not seen marginal net new demand for ETH in a material way. We haven't seen a bull market. ETH hasn't seen a bull market like that.
People don't know what the asset is or what it can do. Mm-hmm. And this is part of the institutional story. I think that should this Ethereum ETF get approved, that will be told by BlackRock and VanEck and all of the large asset pushers.
Yeah, and this is Uncle. Just shout out, Uncle. You're in this weekly roll of twice. ETH has never seen price discovery with both proof of stake and EIP-1559. So that's something to look forward to.
Very bullish, uncharted territory. This whole section is going to age absolutely poorly if the Ethereum ETF is not approved, David. So we're just going all in on this.
We get to temporarily live in the moment of the simulation.
I'm happy right now. Listener, I don't know what your state is, but I'm very happy right now. So is David. Let's go check out the layer twos over on layer two B. This section brought to you by Mantle, which is an L2 that we enjoy. David, are we at all-time highs in terms of total value locked in layer twos?
I think at least tied for it. I haven't seen it higher than this personally. We are a sliver below $45 billion in layer twos. I mean, as soon as ETH goes up by half a percent, that'll hit $45 billion. So congrats to the layer two ecosystem. Zooming in on $50 billion locked in layer twos. Activity across layer twos coming in at a healthy 9.5x. Scaling factor, that means 9.5 Ethereums are being used as true raw organic grass-fed transactions per second on layer twos. Base, of course, taking up the lion's share, but followed actually very closely by Arbitrum. So Base and Arbitrum neck and neck, coming in at 25 transactions per second. And not really at capacity. Those are 25 transactions per second of just like, that's what's going on.
Big price appreciation for all of crypto, for the Ethereum community and outside of it as well, or Ethereum assets, ecosystem assets, and outside of it as well. David, we're going to get into how the Ethereum ETF turnabout happened in the next section. But before we do, maybe give folks a taste. Let's go check in on the Bitcoin ETF, right?
Yeah, because there's actually some positive news here, too.
Okay, tell me
about
it.
It's actually pretty nice. So we have been in a doldrums in the last like 2 months or so because of the equilibrium between outflows and inflows in the Bitcoin ETFs. We are actually at 10 days in a row of positive flows into the Bitcoin ETFs. So what's the day? The 23rd is the day today. Yep. Since the 13th, every single day that the markets have been active has seen net inflows into the Bitcoin ETFs. We are not yet at all-time highs in the total assets under management of all the Bitcoin ETFs, but we are really, really close. So not only are we getting the ETH ETF, hell yeah, but the Bitcoin ETF is resuming to have up-only inflows. So good stuff. Good stuff. Coming up next, how the hell did the odds of an ETH ETF go from 0 to 100, almost 100, inside of 2 days? A historic story in crypto and just an absolutely legendary story that I think will go into the halls of crypto history. Also, the story that started with Elizabeth Warren's anti-crypto army ends with a full Democratic Party 180, and how crypto is now being fought over by both U.S. political parties, starting with SAB 121. We'll pick up where we left off last week, the FIT 21 bill that was voted on by the House this week, and how it's all heralding a new era for crypto's position in politics and therefore the world. But first, before we get to these stories, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors who all had a role in helping develop these stories of the crypto pivot in Capitol Hill. So let's go hear from them right now, starting with Kraken. If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Arbitrum is the leading Ethereum scaling solution that is home to hundreds of decentralized applications. Arbitrum's technology allows you to interact with Ethereum at scale with low fees and faster transactions. Arbitrum has the leading DeFi ecosystem, strong infrastructure options, flourishing NFTs, and is quickly becoming the Web3 gaming hub. Explore the ecosystem at portal.arbitrum.io. Are you looking to permissionlessly launch your own Arbitrum Orbit chain? Arbitrum Orbit allows anyone to utilize Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Orbit chain, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. Whether you are a developer, an enterprise, or a user, Arbitrum Orbit lets you take your project to new heights. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum. Experience Web3 development the way it was always meant to be: secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. Visit arbitrum.io and get your journey started in one of the largest Ethereum communities. Launching a token? Worried about the IRS? Talk to Toku for 5 minutes to learn how to save hundreds of thousands of dollars for you, your team, and your investors. Now, if you do an initial consultation, Toku will cover the cost of your token valuation, which is what you need for your launch. So don't wait. Reach out to the team right now at team@toku.com. That's team@toku.com.
All right, this is it. How did the odds of an Ethereum ETF suddenly swing in our approval? It was like near zero. This is what analysts thought last week. And now it is near certainty. I think in order to tell this story, we have to pick up where we left off. So where did we leave off with political momentum in DC? I think this is an important part of the story.
Yeah, so covering this on the weekly roll-up last week, we were talking about SAB 121, which was a very toxic SEC rule towards crypto that basically is considered a backdoor ban because it really just made custodying crypto assets extremely capital efficient, just treated crypto not like any other asset, basically just like invalidating the feasibility for banks
for trad
and other custodians,
companies, yeah.
for trad companies to custody crypto. This bill to repeal SAB 121, which was an SEC rule, this bill to repeal it was voted on in the Senate. And we got a final vote of 68-30 in order to repeal the vote. Now, the Biden administration has said that if the vote went this way, that there was indeed a vote to repeal, that Biden would then go and veto it. But the surprising thing is how many Democrats in the Senate defected from Biden's from party line, saying that he's going to veto the bill. Well, the Democrats, a good chunk of them, more than what the Democrats should be comfortable with, just didn't care about Biden's statement and voted to repeal it nonetheless. So that bill, SAB 121, is going to Biden's desk. He has to either sign it, which will repeal it, or veto it by Monday. But the point is that the Democrats in the Democratic Party have expressed alignment with the crypto industry and disagreement with Biden's stance towards crypto. That's where we left off.
So we talked about this in last week's roll-up, but analysts really hadn't brought this political analysis into the odds of an Ethereum ETF approval. And why not? It's because it's basically a week before the deadline for approval, and they're not seeing anything. They're not seeing anything from the SEC. They're not seeing updated filings. So basically, the odds of approval felt like on Friday, last Friday, were like 0%.
But Polymarket had it at 7%.
Yes, but David, you and I talked about the potential in the roll-up last week. Can we do it? Can we play the clip?
This was all you, bro. This is one of the best Ryan Sean Adam calls I have ever heard. And I think you had to be a little bit like muted about it, but I think you actually kind of like really wanted to believe this more than you were willing to let on. Let's go pull out this clip from last week's weekly roll-up where Ryan laid out this exact scenario.
Let me give you two tail outcomes that could happen. Sure. Okay. That the tail, I guess positive and a tail negative. All right. Yeah. So the tail event on the good side would be approval. All right. And this is not very likely to happen. I definitely give it under like 5% odds, but there is a chance here, David. And here's what I think it is. If, and this is a big if, Biden and the Democrats wake up, it's 11th hour, they realize that their party is getting painted as the anti-crypto party. And this becomes a November.
Wins them zero votes.
Wins them zero votes. They only lose votes. They only lose money. And Trump steps in and tries to make this a wedge issue. If they want to counteract that, they might actually put some political pressure on the SEC and Gensler to just throw a bone to crypto, just to prove the ETF.
Right.
Okay? Just like call off Gensler. Hey, you can let this one slide. If you don't, it'll hurt us come November. Is not worth David. That is exactly what I think happened.
Exactly what happened. To a T. Well done, sir. Well done.
Oh, man. Well,
proud
you know
of my
what?
Co-host.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you get it right. Sometimes you nail it. But it's just kind of the political tea leaves, I guess. So here's the tweet that really sent this candle that we were talking about in the market section earlier. While this happened on Monday.
This is now this week. This is Monday of this week.
Okay. Now we're fast forward to Monday of this week. Was that at 3:20? So it was the afternoon, 3:20 Eastern.
End of the day Monday.
Okay. So what are we looking at here? The tweet.
Eric Balachunas, who's one of the two ETF commentators out of Bloomberg, they're just ETF experts, have risen to fame since the incoming Bitcoin ETF. He goes, update, James Safer and I are increasing our odds of a spot Ether ETF approval up to 75%, up from 25%. Hearing chatter this afternoon that the SEC could be doing a 180 on this increasingly political issue. So now everyone is scrambling like us. Everyone else assumed they'd be denied. See Nate's tweets below for probably order of events. But again, we're capping at 75% until we see more, for example, filing updates. And so I have a notification turned on for Eric for tweets like this.
Yeah.
And we were in a meeting. We had like our podcast like scheduling meeting or something. And I was reading this tweet and I looked at it and I read it twice and I'm like, this is a
prank.
That's
amazing.
This is a prank. And I read it three times.
Yeah. I saw you in that meeting. I saw it in the one corner of Zoom. I saw it like a big smile like on your face suddenly.
Yeah. I think I just said like, guys, everyone stop. And I think we just stopped the meeting and then we told our podcast team like, we have to go live right now. And that's exactly what we did.
It's so crazy. I know they were saying 25%, but they are actually saying basically approaching zero. They were saying that just dispel all hopium. We're going into the next week. It's 11th hour. There's no document updates.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen, right?
Right.
And so we got that good tail event that actually happened. And so here it is. Ether ETF filing process sees abrupt progress. So suddenly everybody's updating their paperwork.
At the end of Eric Balotrunas' tweet, he says, we are capping our odds at 75% until we hear more. For example, something that we would need to see in order to have a higher than 75% is filing updates. The next thing that happened, filing updates.
That was like the later in the week, right? That was like Tuesday and Wednesday, all of these filing updates pouring in.
So what happened behind the scenes, apparently, is the SEC had a change of heart. Huh. Who knows why? Who knows? Who knows who called Gary Gensler?
Yeah,
but all of a sudden, the SEC is phoning up the issuers mm-hmm. of Ethereum ETFs, BlackRock, Fidelity, Bitwise, VanEck, Galaxy, ARK21. And they said, okay, we're giving you guys comments, and we need you guys to update your 19B4s, which is basically an ETF filing, by like tomorrow, Tuesday at 10:30 a.m.
Yeah.
Or something like this. And like why they needed them to update their filing is because they needed everyone to remove this staking element out of the ETFs.
Yeah.
So now this is now the final form of the 19B4s, the ETF filings from all these companies is about to be approved ETH ETF without staking.
Absolutely amazing. And one thing I'll say, so I'll give another prediction because we haven't seen the approval actually happen, but I'm betting, and I said this last week, I'm betting Gensler comes out and is like, this has always been the plan.
Right.
He's like, of course we did this the last week. We just needed the documents starting Monday.
There was the conspiracy that like people were saying like they're just being really quiet about the ETH ETFs because they don't want the same shenanigans that happened last time.
Yeah, that's what he's going to say. I was protecting investors. We didn't want the same thing to happen. So we had to wait until Monday to start.
We didn't want the Cointelegraph intern market manipulating stuff again.
Whatever. Whatever Gensler says, at least he's going to approve it. Okay. And if you don't believe us that there's some political pressure, I mean, look at this letter. This is what I call political pressure. Dave, this is a
political pressure inside of a document.
Yeah. A bipartisan group, House of Lawmakers from Congress. So this is led by Majority Whip Tom Emmer and also some Democrats. That is basically to address to Gary Gensler and the SEC saying, you guys should approve the ETF. Right. That was just
please
this morning,
approve
Thursday.
The ETF.
Yeah. Yep.
This was sent this morning, Thursday morning, the day of the ETF approval. Interestingly, it says the letter is urging the SEC to approve spot Ether ETFs and other digital assets because it offers investors crypto access in regulated, transparent, and safe formats.
Yep.
Highlighting other digital assets. So not just Ether. They're saying like, hey, like be warmer to crypto.
Yeah. If it's possible for Bitcoin and Ethereum to cross the gauntlet towards a decentralized network, then it should totally be possible for other assets to do that as well. And those should, in the fullness of time, have ETFs as well. This is a trad media commentator, I think, from like Fox Business or something. This is his take. If the SEC does approve the ETH spot ETF, it will be one of the biggest regulatory 180s in recent SEC history and proof that the crypto crowd is a legitimate voting block, securities lawyers tell me. That's what he said. I think that's exactly what it is, and Trad Media is reporting it as such too.
On the flip side of the debate, Nate Gerasi, he is still in the side of the camp where actually politics really didn't have that big of a deal here. He put out a theory that the SEC was always going to wait until the last minute to engage with exchangers and issuers. And so this was a theory beforehand. This remains to be a theory for some people. So it's worth noting that not everyone is convinced by the political theory.
I'm definitely convinced. It was definitely political.
But like, there's plenty of data points to suggest that it was highly political.
We should note, just because the Ethereum ETF is approved doesn't mean you can immediately buy it like next day, right? And this happened with Bitcoin. Although with Bitcoin is approved and there's just like a few days before these ETFs came to market. With Ethereum, it could be longer. So James Seyfert is saying it could be weeks to months before we see S1 approvals and thus an ETH ETF. So there's still another box to check here, still some more paperwork to file, which is these S1 approvals. So even if Gensler and the SEC say, yep, you can have an Ethereum ETF, doesn't mean we go to market immediately. So that'll be another piece of the story.
And this is different from how the Bitcoin ETF went to market. The Bitcoin ETF got approved and then was trading the next day.
Yeah.
So Eric or James is saying it could be like 2 to 6 weeks before we actually get a live Ethereum ETF. Does that matter? No.
Yeah.
No,
I don't think it matters at all.
It does not matter
for the narrative. Because it does so much. I mean, we'll put out an Ethereum ETF specific episode talking about the aftermath of this, but just clarifying that Ether is not a security does so much to just unblock institution investment involvement in not only Ethereum ecosystem, but all of crypto. It's actually one of the biggest events that has ever happened, I think, in this industry.
And it also gives people 2 to 6 more weeks to like front run, like, you know, BlackRock and all these other people, yeah. And allows the market to consider how incredibly offsides it is. And how weak, but that's
chase it up beyond all time highs. By the way, there's a side thing that happened. We're paying attention to this. Dude. So controversial blockchain firm Prometheum launches the long-awaited Ethereum custody. They did this on Monday as well. So this is Prometheum. People have called this like a government plant or something because it seems ultra weird. It's this SEC-sanctioned exchange that keeps telling everyone they can custody ETH, and Ether is a security in the bounds of their exchange. Mm-hmm. It's such a bizarre story.
They claim to be the only compliant custodian of ETH because they have a license from the SEC to custody ETH, which is a security, according to them.
By the way, Dave, it's not just us with a tinfoil hat on this. This seems like a SEC or government plant of some type. There's actually Congress is looking into it. They find it weird as well. But what I found particularly funny was the timing of this. So this happened Monday, and the CEO's name, this is the CEO, Aaron Kaplan, he was wheeled in front of Congress before just basically saying, yeah, it's very easy to come in and register for exchanges. Just look at what we're doing. We did it, right? And so very interesting that this launch of Ethereum custody service for Prometheum just so happened to happen this week, right? A week,
right.
I think that Kaplan and Prometheum were expecting the SEC to deny the Ethereum ETF. And wouldn't that be
because
perfect?
That's probably what the SEC told them. Like, yeah, we're gonna deny the ETF and then you guys are going to be good to go.
Yeah, so here's why I think this is funny. This is a service that no one wants, that no one's going to use. It was brought to market so Gensler has a pet example for Congress to show people that have come in and registered and kind of like done it the law-abiding the right way. And now Gensler is going to completely throw this company under the bus and abandon them by approving the Ethereum ETF. So, chef's kiss. It's actually hilarious how this all turned out. Again, some of that speculation.
Gary Gensler just like leaving his sock puppet out to dry.
Just connect the dots, man. Just connect the dots here.
And this is a plus one to the fact that this was political and not a plan of the SEC to always approve it in the last moment, because this was also a part of their plan, if you believe the conspiracy, which I totally do.
Yeah. All right. That's approval. That's not the only big thing that we expect to happen this week. Here's something we have concrete in our world, in our universe, in our timeline, David. We have concrete proof for a major crypto legislative event. The House passed the FIT 21 bill. What is this? What are we looking at in this tweet?
FIT 21, otherwise known as the Financial Innovation and Technology for the 21st Century Act, was voted on by the House and approved by the House pretty overwhelmingly. 279 yays to 136 nays, including 71 Democrats who voted yay versus 133 Democrats who voted nay. Of course, 208 Republicans voted yay, 3 Republicans voted nay. Like 71 Democrats to 133
Huge.
Who voted no. Like that, any amount of fracturing in the Democratic Party with the Donald Trump versus Biden election being so narrow, so razor thin, any amount of defection is untenable for Biden. And so this is the thing that the crypto industry is celebrating right now, is basically what we are seeing is a divided Democratic Party and a inline Republican Party that's pro crypto. And so any amount of division on the Democratic Party, what we are seeing is that is pulling the whole rest of the Democratic Party and saying, like, do you guys really want to be anti crypto?
Yeah.
Like, is that really the hill you're going to die on?
This was another acid test. So we had SAB 121 last week, right? And now we have this, which is basically, are you pro crypto or you're anti crypto? And 71 Democrats in the House said they wanted to be on the side of pro crypto, which is incredible. I think even analysts who are plugged into this, like their hopes and dreams were around 50 or so, and we got 71. So this is like the biggest marker I've seen of the tide changing in DC and the winds blowing in crypto's favor. David, we should just talk about the high level of what the FIT 21 Act actually is. So what is this thing?
Okay, it is a bill that is being proposed by Chairman Patrick McHenry, which we had on the podcast, and he explained it just directly to us. So that podcast is in your podcast player. But just as a quick summary, there's a few key areas and provisions here. It delineates for the crypto industry when the SEC or the CFTC has jurisdiction. So clarity. It offers consumer protections around transparency and disclosures for promoters and endorsers. It prohibits agencies from preventing from using crypto. It asks the Treasury to study stablecoins. And it also, I think very importantly, gives crypto startups a path to become a commodity while also not violating securities laws in the process. There's this like trap that the Gensler SEC administration has, which is we really want a lot of our protocols to full in the fullness of vision of all of these protocols that are airdropping tokens. We want them to become as commodity like as Bitcoin.
A path.
But
as they become decentralized, right?
But being a security, registering as a security, totally nukes the ability for those teams to distribute tokens to the public because it's a security. So it's a self-terminating path that Gary Gensler is like, there's totally clarity. Just come in and register. But it completely nukes the whole vision of these
Promethean.
Be like Promethean. Yeah. So it gives crypto startups the path to legitimately become a commodity.
It's the biggest pro-crypto legislation that we've ever seen Congress contemplate, I would say. It's not perfect, though. There's some not ideal parts to
perfect.
It, right? So this
perfect.
Is Archival from Electric Capital saying, one of the bad parts is the SEC has to review applications and respond in 90 days, right? So there's still some agency gatekeeping. And if the SEC determines an asset operates without a controlling entity, the asset is a commodity and the CFTC has jurisdiction. That's good, but it's still leaving the SEC as a determiner of this. Mm-hmm. And so there's some agency bias that could be at play. And so I think for people that are skeptical of the SEC, like us, of course, this is not ideal. But still, having clear rules is definitely a big step forward. And a lot of this might get dealt with in the Senate. There's going to be a different type of a bill. There's going to be an opportunity for a lot of revisions. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. But the big news here is the political change in DC. And that is even affecting the White House. What are we looking at here, David?
This is a statement of administration policy out of the Biden administration, who says the administration opposes the passage of this bill, which would affect the regulatory structure for digital assets in the United States, but nonetheless would not veto it if it came across his desk, which is the important thing.
I think it's safe to say that's the most pro-crypto statement ever coming out of the White House, at least in the Biden tenure. So interesting, David, Nancy Pelosi was also in favor of this. This is a statement from Nancy Pelosi.
People are joking that, like, well, Nancy Pelosi, the greatest trader on planet Earth,
if she is
pro this, she's probably already bought our bags and she's going to continue to like be pro crypto.
Big Pelosi.eth vibes here. She's probably got some ETH bags coming into this. FIT 21, she said, is a first step to establish a regulatory framework for digital assets, and it must be improving by working with the Senate and the administration. So she's pro crypto. There was tons of anti-crypto sentiment. We'll say that as well.
From the usual suspects.
Okay, so let's play this clip because it's too good not to play.
Oh, God, this is so cringe.
Brad Sherman here.
But the long-term objective of the crypto billionaire bros is to create a new currency, and they've named it well. Cryptocurrency literally means hidden money.
Cryptocurrency literally means hidden money, David.
Did you
made
that up?
I don't even know what is he even talking about? I don't know what this guy's talking
like,
about.
You can kind of see what he's saying. Like cryptography
it's
can
scary.
Help with privacy,
ooh.
But like, there's no way he actually. Yeah, no, he just read something.
This tweet is absolutely legendary as well. This might go down in history. It's definitely the most ratioed tweet I've ever seen. The most hated tweet maybe on the internet. Certainly in crypto. What are we looking at?
So this is FSC Dems Twitter account, United States House Committee on Financial Services. And it's asking the question, who benefits from the passage of the FIT 21 Purpose Act? Green check mark in front of wealthy crypto firms that have chosen not to register with the SEC or otherwise comply with the securities laws. And then who stands to lose? Red X? Ordinary investors trying to build wealth, which is a really hot take.
Wow.
Like Ryan said, there are 91 likes on this tweet, which is not large. There are 1,100 comments on this tweet, and I'll go ahead and read some of them aloud because they're all pretty hilarious. An NFT PFP Anon says, as a perfectly ordinary person who's trying to build wealth, y'all can't be more in the wrong here. It blows my mind that I'll have to vote red this election. You and only you will be responsible for losing the White House. Chris Berniski, he replies to this tweet as well and says, oh, gaslighting ordinary investors again, huh? Eric Voorhees, who also responds to the same tweet, says, the only investors that have built wealth substantially above inflation over the last decade have been crypto investors. Meanwhile, the dollar decays into oblivion. And then Ryan Sean Adams, my co-host here, he says, you guys still trying to win elections or nah? You can just like scroll down on this tweet. It's worth it. It's pretty funny. It's basically a who's who in crypto. You have like laser-eyed Maxis dunking on this tweet. You have Soul Bros dunking on this tweet. You have the Ethereum community dunking on this tweet. It's just a great snapshot of just like everyone in crypto.
Everyone's perspective too. Like, I think the anti-crypto army accidentally unified all of crypto, and I've never seen crypto so unified as over these policy issues. It's a really, really cool time. Of course, our friend Gary Gensler was dead set against the FIT 21 Act. He published a statement here the morning that the debate for in the vote for FIT 21 was going. He says, FIT would create new regulatory gaps and undermine decades of precedent regarding the oversight of investment contracts. Again, with this line, David, putting investors in capital markets at immeasurable risk. That's what would happen if FIT was approved. So Gensler against it. But Gensler doesn't get his way. Okay, so Congress voted approval. And let's talk about what this means. I think, firstly, this is a major political win for crypto. It just signifies that we're getting better. We're leveling up on politics. Remember 2 years ago, it seemed like the only person really making gains in D.C. was Sam Bankman-Fried, right? Wow. How terrible that was. This is a Ryan Selkis tweet about that. SBF almost destroyed us in D.C. by acting alone. It took a large, loud, open, multiplayer, loosely coordinated, grassroots, deep-pocketed band of misfits to brute force this result, a passed House bill. Congrats, crypto. You're now a major American political force. I really feel like that's true. It was so many of us acting. It was like Bankless, Selkis from Messari. It was like, you know, crypto lobbyists. It's all of that. It was politicians. It was like a group effort. Okay.
Right.
And
tip of the hat to specifically crypto lawyers, who I think are just some of the most Chad people that I know in this industry. They're just great people.
Yeah. Totally agree. I think one caveat of all of this is because, again, go back to the FIT bill isn't perfect, okay?
Right.
And the way Selkis frames this, which I think is right, is we made political progress, but political progress is not equal to policy progress, okay? So the political progress we made is now crypto is on the register of every politician in D.C. They know that we are a faction that votes, right. A faction that funds parties, a faction that shows up politically in the U.S. We've never had that before.
A faction in the Democrat sphere.
Exactly. But we still need to make some progress in the policy. And the FIT 21 bill isn't perfect. But there's opportunity for that. So like, one, I think we'll get better at crafting policy and like pushing that forward and educating lawmakers. But the FIT 21 bill goes to Senate next, and it probably won't be approved in Senate. So like, I'm hearing...
And should we be sad about that? I thought we wanted the FIT 21 bill.
Not really. Like, I am personally not sad about this because it requires some revisions, honestly. Right. So,
because this is a political win, not a policy win. The FIT 21 bill, policy wise, not the greatest grade. That's actually not why we're celebrating. We're celebrating because it was a political win shown by the amount of defecting Democrats in the House.
Yeah. Correct? And now it has an opportunity to be revised, basically. So the Senate, what they'll have to do, and they haven't done this yet, is a Senate champion has to pick it up and create a companion bill for this. Mm-hmm. And right now, like, no one has stepped up to lead the charge. So hopefully that happens. But that's not going to happen anytime soon. So this is not like the SAB 121, where it went to the House and there's a timeline where the Senate has to vote for it. Okay. It's just in the Senate's queue. They can sit on this forever, or they can come up with a companion bill that has some like more crypto favorable policy refinements. And I'm hopeful they do that.
Zooming all the way out, we started the 2023 year talking about this idea of choke point 2.0. And this was during just like the absolute depth of the oppression of the crypto industry by the establishment, by the banking sector, by the Biden administration, the Democratic establishment. Choke Point 2.0 was this effort to debank crypto and basically invalidate it as an industry by suppressing it through the banking means. And so this is really when the fight against Gary Gensler was really starting to heat up. This was when, during the Silicon Valley banking crisis, many of the very crypto-friendly banks that banked many of these startups and paid the payrolls of many crypto startups was being targeted by the Department of the Treasury and FinCEN.
FDIC as well.
FDIC, yeah, exactly. And so a main leader, a main player in the coordination of Choke Point 2.0 is FDIC Chair Marty Gruenberg, who is actually resigning for completely unrelated reasons, for the political reasons that we've talked about. It just happens so coincidentally to happen this week. But one of the main players of our Choke Point 2.0 is resigning, and that is the head of FDIC. There's some other players here who are worth noting. Gary Gensler, of course, main character here. Elizabeth Warren, another main character here. And while Marty Grumber, he's formally off of the board, that chess piece is being removed. Gary Gensler just got nerfed this week. Elizabeth Warren just got nerfed this week. And so there are some, like, there's a huge weakening in the whole entire concept of Choke Point 2.0. So, like, I think if there's ever a week where Choke Point 2.0 formally died, it was this week.
Oh, the anti-crypto army is in full retreat for sure. And this is like more of that. It should note with Marty is he was actually forced to resign because there was like some scandals and workplace harassment, right? Like a toxic culture, all of these things. So unrelated to crypto, but still worth celebrating.
We'll take the dub.
we'll take that.
he should be out of office either way.
Yeah. All right. Well, so let's summarize all this. And I think Mike Novogratz actually did a fantastic job of summarizing this on CNBC. Let's just play the clip.
And I think the Democratic regime woke up and saying this is crazy, right? There are more crypto owners in America than there are dog owners, right? We have 85 million people that own crypto, and a lot of them are single issue voters. And the Democrats looked like they were the party against dogs.
So you're speculating that a phone call was made from the White House to Gary Gensler's office, and Gary Gensler, who has, for the most part, as you know, been relatively opposed to these instruments. In fact, he was opposed to the Bitcoin ETF until a court told him otherwise. You think he's going to do it, quote unquote, voluntarily or maybe pseudo voluntarily if in fact the president's telling him otherwise?
I am sensing a widespread shift amongst Democrats that don't want to let crypto be a big election issue, right? The crypto super PACs have raised over $150 million, and they've targeted Sherrod Brown and John Tester, you know, elections that matter dearly to Democrats in swing states, in vulnerable Senate seats. Crypto should be bipartisan. And quite frankly, for our industry to do well, it needs to be bipartisan. And it has been really Elizabeth Warren and a small group of people that has kind of...
I think he's exactly right, David. That is exactly what happened. Maybe just a final summary on this historic week that we've had and this political wind shift. You've got a short story that you want to tell. So tell your short story, David.
I do have a short story. So this goes all the way back to March 29th, 2023. Does that date ring a bell for you for any reason, Ryan?
No, not really. What happened that date?
That date was the day that Elizabeth Warren tweeted out her infamous graphic of Elizabeth Warren is building a anti-crypto army. And this triggered just an insane uproar in the crypto industry.
Just this picture alone, it's just like Elizabeth Warren, like, you know, visionary, looking into the distance, trying to save America through this.
Stoic leader building an anti-crypto army. And we were all like, I think, very confused in the crypto industry. Like, who is this message for?
Yeah.
It's like her base of Massachusetts just like clapping is like, well done, Elizabeth. Go build
that's
that anti-crypto armor.
We don't care about jobs or the economy.
We really just want crypto to go away. Like, who? Like, we were all asking, who is the marginal anti-crypto voter out there? And like, what is she benefiting from this?
Yes.
Anyways, zooming forward to May 22nd today. So 2 years later. 1 year later, Donald Trump's campaign says he will build a Bitcoin and crypto army to defeat Joe Biden in the presidential election. Followed up by a news report out of Bitcoin Magazine says Joe Biden's campaign is asking for donations, saying cryptocurrency executives are backing Donald Trump and outraising them, rushing $800,000 checks at glitzy events. This is the same day that Trump started accepting Bitcoin and crypto for campaign donations, followed by this next part of the story, which I thought was pretty interesting. And I don't think too many people saw this analysis going around on crypto. This is Sean Tuffy, who I think is just pays attention to the political establishment. He says, I mean, I'm more critical of crypto than most, but this is basically how any lobbying effort works. The issue is, and I'll put my hands up and say I'm guilty of this in the past, that the anti-crypto faction thought that the whole thing, the thing being crypto, would just disappear. So they had no plan B for the eventual possibility that maybe the crypto army doesn't disappear. So the calculus behind Elizabeth Warren and the Biden administration anti-crypto army was that crypto was just going to die. And then they would be able to like take credit for like, yeah, we stamped out those like crypto bros. Ha ha ha. And like you kind of can't blame their naivety because every single bear market, like people post articles like Bitcoin just died. Bitcoin is dead. And so I think they just did that, but like a political version.
Yeah, they were like now's our time. FTX.
Now's our time to like take this free real estate of claiming victory over this like crypto army by building an anti-crypto army. Meanwhile, it turns out the crypto army did not go away. In fact, we just got stronger and we got rallied as a result of this. And then today, this morning, Cynthia Lummis tweets out, Senator Cynthia Lummis tweets out, we are building a pro-crypto army in Congress after we all force the Democratic Party to do a 180 and give us what we want. So now, as a conclusion of all of this drama for the last like year and a half after Choke Point 2.0, the incoming election, Biden versus Trump, the Gary Gensler and the SEC, we now have two political parties, Democrats and Republicans, both fighting over the crypto vote. So everyone, just give yourself a pat on the back, because that was a very hard 2 years.
You know,
and
David,
we did not deserve it. But we're coming out winning on the other side.
I think, you know, like, part of us did deserve it, but you gotta hand it to Elizabeth Warren. I think
we didn't deserve the oppression.
Yes.
And we didn't deserve to be treated like how the Democrats have been treating us.
You gotta hand it to Elizabeth Warren, though. I think what she accidentally created was a pro crypto army through this resistance.
Exactly,
again, never
exactly
seen crypto
right.
So unified. David, we got more to talk about. What's next?
Coming up next, now with all this bullishness, did this reopen the window for large protocol airdrops? Because there are not one, not two, but three A-tier companies that are all teasing their airdrop for next week and maybe the week beyond. There's also an update in the Uniswap versus SEC case. And also, did Nigeria just kidnap a crypto executive from Binance? We're going to talk to you about all of this and more. But first, a moment to talk about these fantastic sponsors that make the show possible. New projects are coming online to the Mantle Layer 2 every single week. Why is this happening? Maybe it's because Mantle has been on the frontier of Layer 2 design architecture since it first started building Mantle DA, powered by technology from EigenDA. Maybe it's because users are coming onto the Mantle Layer 2 to capture some of the highest yields available in DeFi and to automatically receive the points and tokens being accrued by the $3 billion Mantle treasury in the Mantle reward station. Maybe it's because the Mantle team is one of the most helpful teams to build with, giving you grants, liquidity support, and venture partners to help bootstrap your Mantle application. Maybe it's all of these reasons all put together. So if you're a dev and you want to build on one of the best foundations in crypto, or you're a user looking to claim some ownership on Mantle's DeFi apps, click the link in the show notes to getting started with Mantle. Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world, driving real-world use cases like mobile payments and mobile DeFi, and with Opera MiniPay as one of the fastest-growing Web3 wallets, Celo is seeing a meteoric rise with over 300 million transactions and 1.5 million monthly active addresses. And now Celo is looking to come home to Ethereum as a layer two. Optimism, Polygon, Matter Labs, and Arbitrum have all thrown their hats in the ring for the Celo layer two to build upon their stacks. Why the competition? The Celo layer two will bring huge advantages like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability secured by Ethereum validators, and one block finality. What does that all mean for you? With Celo layer two, gas fees will stay low and you can even pay for gas natively using ERC20 tokens, sending crypto to phone numbers across wallets using Social Connect. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forums. Follow Celo on Twitter and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum.
Have you ever felt that the tools for developing decentralized applications are too restrictive and fail to leverage advancements from traditional software programming? There's a wide range of expressive building blocks beyond conventional smart contracts and Solidity development. Don't waste your time building the basics from scratch, and don't limit the potential of your vision. Cartesi provides powerful and scalable solutions for developers that supercharge app development. With a Cartesi virtual machine, you can run a full Linux OS and access decades of rich code libraries and open source tooling for building in web Web3. And with Cartesi's unique rollup framework, you'll get real-world scaling and computation. No more competing for block space. So, if you're a developer looking to push the boundaries of what's possible in Web3, Cartesi is now offering up to $50,000 in grants. Head over to Cartesi's grant application page to apply today. And if you're not a developer, those with staked CTSI can take part in the governance process and vote on whether or not a proposal should be funded. Make sure you're vote ready by staking your CTSI before the votes open.
Are we getting more airdrops coming up? Tyco, which is a layer two on Ethereum that is EVM equivalent, DK layer two with some base rollup features as well, has released their airdrop tease video explicitly saying airdrop coming. So we got a Tyco airdrop on the way.
Because it's a blimp through the clouds. I get it. And oh, the blimp says airdrop. All right.
That's the one. The blimp literally says airdrop on it.
Cool.
It's not a joke. Also, ZK Sync. There has been rumors going around that ZK Sync is aiming for an airdrop in early June, that there's a token generation event. They're going to mint a token this week. And then the airdrop will occur 30 days after token generation event. And so that's
ZK Sync's a big one.
ZK Sync's a very big one. ZK Sync has been around since I've been around in crypto. ZK Sync was actually the first time I ever used ZK technology to pay for Gitcoin donations back in 2019.
Very cool tech.
And then
cool
Layer Zero teased their V2 coming in May 28th. I mean, Layer Zero has been doing the whole anti-Sybil campaign, so that's actually not really a surprise. But they are just being much more explicit about V2. You can only imagine that V2 includes a token.
Look, I think
happy airdrop hunting.
I think all three of these could be close to $1 billion airdrops, like unicorn airdrops.
You mean $1 billion given to users?
I think so. I'm not going to call it, but like
the fully diluted valuation of all of these, I'm guessing, is going to be above $5 billion for each one of these.
Yeah,
that feels pretty safe.
So that means,
whether they each one can give $1 billion away to users, I think that's a good like high watermark to like aim for. I hope so.
Close though, they're big. They're going to be big and broadly distributed. David, what's the CryptoPunk news?
Oh my God, this is the one bearish thing that happened this week.
Really?
So a CryptoPunk project from Yuga Labs announced Super Punk World, a 500-piece collection, more NFTs. They're like CryptoPunk-esque, but they're slightly 3D.
CryptoPunk-esque to me.
Yeah, that was the feedback from like the CryptoPunks. The joke was that like CryptoPunks, just in order for CryptoPunks to be bullish, you just have to leave them alone. Just like don't touch them.
Yeah.
And Yuga Labs touch
like
them.
Like Bitcoin.
Explaining like how these like little NFTs look on the visually is kind of hard. Kind of flat 2D creatures. But
like,
with a butt though, if you notice, like they added the one part that they added depth to is the butt.
Oh yeah.
And the butt and the nose.
It's trendy.
People hated these. They're ugly. Like, I don't want to collect them.
They were building these things for the CryptoPunk community, and the CryptoPunk is like, thanks, I hate it. And
we
like,
don't want this.
Yeah.
Just leave our punks alone. Stop touching the punks.
But didn't they say that? Isn't that part of the story?
So rejected by public commentators that one of the members, the co-founders of Yuga Labs, had to put out this tweet. I'm just going to read the last paragraph. It says, what about punks? Yuga will no longer touch punks. They will just be decentralized and preserved on the blockchain.
Thanks.
The only thing that we intend to do is support a few museums and institutions in their quest to acquire a punk and help educate their audience about them.
Yeah.
So I think Yuga's lab's like, yeah, sorry guys, we're not going to touch punks
anymore.
Yeah,
in an effort add value, they like diminished value, I guess.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Good lesson learned there. David, tell me about the Uniswap Wells notice, because we found out that some details. There's always some speculation as to what was in the nasty gram from the SEC, what it was that Uniswap did to offend the sensibilities of the good old SEC. We found out what that is, right? What are they charging Uniswap with?
So there were three things that we were speculating about when we heard about the Wells notice for Uniswap, that Uniswap is itself an unregistered exchange. The wallet itself is a broker, so is the website. And then the UNI token is an unregistered security. Those are the three things that we thought the SEC were going to talk about.
But
two of those things were correct.
Okay.
One of them was incorrect. Oh. It turns out they are not going after the UNI token. They are instead, interestingly, going after the LP token and saying that the LP contract is a security.
How does
so
that
the
feel?
UNI token untouched, but if you are a liquidity provider in Uniswap, you deposit like ETH and USDC into Uniswap, you are a market maker, you get an LP token back in return, and that's the security.
This feels even worse. Because
this makes even more less sense.
It makes less sense, but it also feels even worse, because I was kind of wondering, like, why is SEC suing all these companies for the exact same things? And, you know, like, what it looks like they're doing is for some of the same things, but they're trying to create more precedent surface area for winning now against LP positions.
Right.
Right. If you call that a security, you basically like clamp down, shut down like a major faction of DeFi.
Right. And also like maybe the LP contract, the SEC is like, well, that's an investment contract. But where in the Uniswap protocol are they promising a return? Like LPs actually lose money.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. David, like, what is going on here? Does Gary Gensler just like losing? Because he's been having a big, like, a terrible year. He's losing in Congress, losing the support of his own party, certainly going to lose some of these court cases. This is Hayden Adams. What does he say in the fight back here?
He says, we believe the SEC should embrace open source technology that makes markets cheaper, faster, and more safe. The SEC's reckless approach to crypto has not protected consumers and caused immeasurable harm in the United States, individuals, businesses, and the state itself. We should lean on internet innovation, not stifle it. We are proud of our work. We have nothing to hide. We're ready to fight for Uniswap and DeFi in court, and we're ready to win. Uniswap Labs also had a response to the LP token specifically. They said the LP token is used as a bookkeeping device to keep track of the asset the user provided in the, to the smart contract and any fees earned on the user's liquidity. In other words, the LP token are issued not for investment purposes, but instead as an accounting tool, and they are therefore not securities. Literally just explaining how the Uniswap contracts work to the SEC.
This is also
something
dumb.
That's notable about this, Ryan, is that if you map out like some of the major tokens in the Ethereum ecosystem versus ETH this week, all of the tokens are up versus the dollar and they're down versus ETH, which should be no surprise because Ether is getting the ETF. Ethereum layer two tokens, Optimism, Arbitrum, Polygon had pretty strong weeks this week, like 10 to 20% price performance, but down versus ETH. Uniswap, UniToken, is the only token I could find that actually held its value versus ETH. It is flat on the week versus ETH, which means it's up like 30%.
It pumped just as hard as ETH.
It pumped just as hard as ETH. And I have a take about this.
What's your take?
Because the SEC is going after Uniswap, and also we thought the Uni token, we are seeing a shift in the winds about the SEC's stance towards crypto, at least a little bit with the ETH ETF. We're seeing a shift in the winds towards the Democratic establishment towards crypto. I think we are seeing the regulatory boot of the SEC getting priced out of the Uni token.
Doesn't matter anymore.
It's like we don't care about the SEC's impact on crypto. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a great take. And I think that's exactly what's happening. And I think that is even bigger than the inflows. That's why this is, in some ways, a more momentous week. In some ways not, because Bitcoin was the first Bitcoin ETF. But in some ways, it's even more momentous than the Bitcoin ETF, because it sets precedent for everything not Bitcoin. The entire token economy now has some space to breathe. Now there's some oxygen in the room in the United States. And I think
you're seeing it
in Uniswap price.
I totally
agree. You're making me more bullish.
This is so bullish. It's like, yes, ETH the asset had a huge dub this week, but everything else also got a huge dub
this
week. If any other token ever wanted an ETF, this needed to have happened. This week needed to have happened.
Wow. All right. Well, one more thing I want to mention, because you said the CryptoPunk thing was the only bad news on the week, but there was actually some more bad news, because here's a story. Binance executive denied bail in Nigeria amid $35 million money laundering trial. So a justice in the federal court of Nigeria refused a grant to bail out some of the executives that were held in custody. So there's two executives from Binance held in custody. We've talked a little bit about this, but the story has just gotten super wild. It actually looks like, David, they're kidnapping crypto people.
Oh my God.
Okay? Christ. I mean, I know that sounds Alex Jonesy, but like Nigeria has a failing currency. The currency's not doing well. They're trying to operation choke point Binance and other exchanges in Nigeria. And they're actually picking up mid-level executives, arresting them, throwing them into jail, and not releasing them on bail. That's what's going on over in Nigeria. So this is the new Binance CEO, not CZ. So someone named Richard Tang, that I think the crypto industry needs to get to know. He says this. He writes a whole blog post about it. This was published earlier in the month. But to invite a company's mid-level employees for collaborative policy meetings, this is what Nigeria did. This is like, come on, Binance, let's come talk. Only to detain them. That's what they did. They detained them, put them in jail. They're under arrest. Has set a dangerous new precedent for all companies worldwide. All right. This is what happens when your government abandons rule of law and starts to go hardcore capital control anti-crypto. And I think it's like a warning shot, because look at this. The top 10 overall apps
this is really
in Nigeria.
Cool. This is really, really cool.
These are the top 10 trending apps in Nigeria right now. Do you want to read some of these?
Coming in number one, Phantom, a crypto wallet, the Solana wallet. Number two, Telegram Messenger. Number three and number four, two different VPNs. Number five, Ton wallet for the Telegram blockchain. Number six, Soulflare, a Solana wallet. Seven, Twitter. And then nine, Bybit. And 10, another VPN. So basically, we have Solana wallets, VPNs, Telegram Messenger, and a Telegram wallet. And so I think the story here is people are trying to get access to blockchain stuff.
It's all
specifically Solana. So congrats to the Solana ecosystem.
It's all anti-authoritarian tech, basically.
It's all anti-authoritarian tech.
Like, look at the trend here. And this is what happens in the late stages of capital control. Our best to the Binance executive, certainly.
Yeah.
David, something else that is relatively historic, I would say, is
probably the most historic thing that happened this week.
Good week to do it. So Bankless just went on chain. So we did a first season of podcast collectibles. Some people collected those. We stopped that at some time early last year because gas fees were too high. We knew we wanted to pivot to layer
we
two.
We needed to evolve the strategy.
Yeah, and we just launched that. So we are launching podcast, Bankless podcast collectibles on the Zora chain in some partnership with Zora as well. And so this is our phase two. And in phase two, you can, with a couple of clicks, mint the entire archive of episodes. And the gas prices on Zora just cost like cents.
Nothing. Yeah, they're nothing.
Mints are super cheap too. I think it's 0.00000777
00077
for per ETH per episode. ETH per episode.
Per episode. Yeah.
So it's like a couple dollars. You know, like your $2-$3. And moving forward, we are minting every single episode. So this roll up, the roll up you're listening to, there'll be a button that you can go click. If you want to collect this on chain. I don't know what we're going to do with it. At first, it's a collectible. It could evolve into other things, but it's your Bankless on-chain footprint. It's really cool. I went and I collected this episode, David. This is our episode
with Patrick McHenry, the senator, who just talked about Fit 21.
Yep.
We have 33 minters of said episode. Shout out Kenny.eth, who was my COVID walking buddy.
Oh, is he our top minter here?
Well, he owns three of the episodes, of these episodes.
A wise collector then. So that is going to happen. Every episode from here on out, we probably won't mention it very often, but it'll always be there for you in the show notes. David, a last monster raise we got to talk about is Farcaster raised $150 million on a $1 billion valuation. Of course, Farcaster is an Ethereum-based SocialFi type of app, or you know, I don't know if you'd call it SocialFi, but it's like a Twitter clone client. We've done episodes with Dan Romero on Farcaster.
I would call it meaningfully differentiated from crypto. What do they call it? Minimum viable decentralization for a social app.
Very cool though. Absolutely monster raise. This is one of the most successful apps in crypto that have nothing to do with speculation. Which is also...
But you can also speculate on it.
You can. Looks like that's what some VCs are doing here as well. David, let's end this historic week with a meme of the week. You selected this one, didn't you?
Yeah, I did this. So we all remember the Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren is leading a crypto army, an anti-crypto army. Same graphic, but instead of that, it just says, oh, fuck. Yikes.
There you go, guys. We'll have to end it there. Of course, risks and disclaimers. None of this has been financial advice. Crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This time, we've got an Ethereum ETF. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone.
Please, God, approve the Ethereum ETF. Oh, my God.
This will be a great collectible if it doesn't get approved.
If it doesn't,
But we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot. They said it was impossible for ETF to be approved. Just goes to show nobody ever has a clue. There were a few exceptions that proved the rule. I'm talking about Susano and Ryan Sean. I think it is. Biden and the Democrats wake up. It's 11th hour. They might actually put some political pressure on the SEC and Gensler to just throw a bone to crypto, just to prove the ETF. Okay?
I hope you for sure. Yeah, pass whatever you're smoking.
Looked out my window this morning. I was thrilled to see you.